7, Stan Phillips.
Mansions of glory and suicide machines sprung from cages on highway nine, torn with human ticket and stepping out over the line.
Hey, happy hump day, Met fans. How you doing? You gotta be feeling good after last night. We took the first game of the Subway Series. It was electric at Citi Field. And can you imagine what it's going to be like in October when or if we make the playoffs? I'm saying when we make the playoffs. We will make the playoffs. But yesterday was a big litmus test to see how the Mets would handle it when all the eyes of the baseball world are upon them. And they passed the test with flying colors. How'd they do it? Well, on the strength of a four-run first inning, a gutsy start by Taijuan Walker, and more Edwin Diaz dominance, the Mets beat our crosstown rivals, the Bronx Bombers, a.k.a. the Yankees, 6-3 on Tuesday night at Citi Field. And what a gutsy four-out save by Edwin Diaz. And he proved his mettle in an enormous spot, and he is having what some may even say is the best year a Met reliever has ever had. Diaz's teammates marvel at the season Diaz is having, and so am I. I'm marveling at it. And who knows, this series could be a taste of what's to come in October. And things are only looking brighter on the Met horizon. Even Francisco Alvarez is now the number one prospect in baseball. And it looks like we will not be trading him to the Nationals for Juan Soto. And that may be a blessing in disguise. But we'll see. Again, I'm not an expert on these things. But we will see. And the one thing that is somewhat enlightening and good to see also is the fact that the Atlanta Braves are nipping at the Mets' heels, and the Mets don't seem to be fazed by it. They're going about their business and just playing ball. And some more good news, James McCann is expected to start a rehab assignment on Thursday. So some of our catching woes may be alleviated. Who knows, we may be going after Wilson Contreras. So much is going to happen next week or so, not only with the Mets, but in the baseball world. We shall see what happens. Now here is Buck Showalter talking about that atmosphere I just mentioned last night in Citi Field.
In the end game, but you know, we've played a lot of emotional games here already. And anytime you play in New York and you play in front of our fans, there's a real engagement of it. Obviously, you know, I understand why it might be at a little different level tonight, and rightfully so, but you know, pressure's, you know, it's kind of what you make of it. It's a privilege, and, you know, to be able to play in this. Like I told the players in advance of me, it's a privilege to play in this environment and, you know, have fun, draw something from it, and, you know, you'll be able to reach back for it as we go forward and hopefully be able to use it if we can get an opportunity to do what we're trying to do. Edwin's, you know, he's, I don't think he's got to show us anything in that situation. He, you know, he's just been a great weapon for us, you know, and we felt like going tonight, as light as his workload's been, that we could get four outside of him, and it worked out. Otto was frustrated because he really wanted to, you know, let him have a clean inning, but Edwin's been, he's been a rock for us. And,
All right.
I don't know if there's been a better guy at the end of games this year than him. You guys would know better. I don't spend much time looking at other guys unless we're playing them, but he's just been, you know, competitively and just regardless of that he's pitching for you or not, it's been an honor to watch him pitch this year.
You know, that that fourth inning could have gone really bad. You know, like I could have given up four runs, five runs, and it could have been really bad, and I would have been out of it. But, you know, to still limit him to very little damage there, and to bounce back in those last two innings and get shutdown innings and just have clean innings after that, you know, I just feel like everything is, for me right now, this year is just overall, like, really good. You know, I feel comfortable with all my pitches. I'm throwing everything right now for strikes, and, you know, I just feel confident right now.
And there you have it, Buck Showalter, again, complimenting Edwin Diaz and Taijuan Walker, talking about how he managed to survive a tough jam and get big W. And he has been flying under the radar this year. Unless you're a diehard Met fan, I'm not sure if many people recognize the fact that he's been the best Met pitcher this year and one of the candidates for team MVP. Way to go, Taiwan. But let's talk a little bit more about Edwin Diaz. All right, let's admit it, Met fans. When Edwin Diaz lost his grip on that potential throw to second in the ninth inning, putting two runners on, and bringing the tying run to the plate, bet a lot of you were holding your breath and saying, uh-oh. It's understandable. No matter how dominant Diaz has been this season, it's hard to forget all those home runs he gave up in his first year as a Met. How overwhelmed he seemed to be by the task of closing games in the spotlight in New York. So in this environment, a crowd so electric for the Subway Series that Eduardo Escobar said it felt like the World Series to him, it was perfectly fair to wonder if this is where Diaz succumbed to the moment again. Instead, he passed perhaps his biggest test of the season in spectacular fashion, blowing away Anthony Rizzo and Gleyber Torres to finish off the Mets' 6-3 win over the Yankees at Citi Field on Tuesday night. In the ballpark, with the crowd up and roaring on every pitch, it felt like a huge rite of passage, a night when Diaz won all the doubters. I'll raise my hand over forever to the point where all those old questions about his mental toughness have to be gone for good. Make no mistake, he's bound to blow a big save or two the rest of the way, because it happens to even the best of closers. But let's put the other stuff to rest. That is, Diaz is plenty tough enough to be the last man standing in October if he gets that opportunity. I can't think of anybody else right now I'd want out there. His teammates know that. The teammates who were there in 2019 seem to have an extra admiration on how far he's come to be this dominant again. And let's be honest, he's been able to reinvent himself and maximize what he can do, what is really special. When he gets the ball now, we know he's going to shut the door. He's doing it mostly by striking out the world. Diaz now has 81 strikeouts in 40.2 innings. An unbelievable number, and he seems to be getting better every day. Of the last 36 outs, he's recorded 27 via strikeout. He's making it look so easy. And, you know, when you make it look that easy, you have to realize it really isn't that easy. He's automatic right now, and it's fun to see. It's actually, you want to see Diaz pitch now. It's like seeing DeGrom or Scherzer. If he doesn't pitch, you feel a little bit let down. Now, there was more to the Mets' win on this night, of course. For all their struggles hitting lately, they still seem to rise to the occasion when necessary. Just as they did in Atlanta against the Braves in that rubber game, the Mets woke up offensively against their intra-city rivals. So when the intensity is amped up, it seemed like the Mets seem a little bit more focused at the plate. And that's a good thing come playoff time. You'd like to see it more often, but it is good, especially since they were down 2-0 before the big crowd could get settled in. And the Yankee fans were doing their best to make it sound like the Bronx when the Mets responded instantly with those four runs in the bottom of the first. In that sense, it felt like April and May again, when the Mets' offense led the world in clutch hits and two-out hits and two-strike hits. You name it. They were doing it all back in the beginning of the year. They always seemed to have an answer. They always seemed like they had an answer the first couple months, and things were going good. In the Guerra Subway Series spotlight, they showed that same mettle that they did in the first inning with two home runs, otherwise known as the Yankees' weapon of choice. They made the response that was much more impressive. Meanwhile, Taiwan Walker survived shaky command, probably because he hadn't pitched in 10 days to give the Mets a gutty six innings and get the game to the late-inning bullpen. Ottavino was good again, as he has been most of the season, even if his inability to hold runners on and his vulnerability against left-handed batters continue to make the case the Mets need to trade for David Robertson. And the rest was Diaz. Showalter understood this was a big game and good for him. Sometimes managers want to downplay the Subway Series, but Showalter before the game said, "We understand it's important to our fans, so it's important to us." So he went to Diaz for the four-out save, recognizing that Joey Gallo was a dangerous matchup for Ottavino, no matter how many times he struck out this season. And Diaz overmatched Gallo, sending him back to the dugout with his 103rd strikeout of the season. Finally, in the ninth, what I found most impressive was how he relished the idea of challenging Aaron Judge, the Majors' home run leader, getting two swings and misses with 100-mile-an-hour fastballs. And it looked like they were even faster than that, the way they moved. And it was a fun challenge. That's what baseball is all about. And Diaz went out there thinking he was the best on the mound. And he had a 3-run lead, so he had some room to play with. So he'd go after Judge, and it was fun baseball. Now, having made his point, Diaz threw an 0-2 slider that Judge did well to put in play with the comebacker that Diaz should have been content to field and throw to first for the second out of the inning. But instead, he tried for the force out in second, and the ball slipped out of his hand. You could practically hear the Met fans in the crowd gasp in disbelief. But Diaz, he laughed at himself, and he remained calm. He might have said after the fact that it was true or not, whether it was true or not, but he was oozing confidence. And these days, you have to believe he is. Tying run at the plate for him? No problem. It took 7 pitches to finish the job. Slider, 100-mile-an-hour fastball, and Rizzo was done. Then Torres, slider, 98-mile-an-hour fastball outside. Slider, fouled off. Slider swinging. Good night. Put it in the books. The Mets win. There should be no more doubting Diaz after this one. It is his year. And how about Francisco Alvarez? He is now the number one prospect in baseball per MLB pipeline. He was previously ranked number 2, but after Detroit Tigers outfield Riley Green graduated from his prospect status, Alvarez became the man, numero uno. He was recently promoted to AAA Syracuse and got his first AAA home run on July 23rd, but it's been a little slow out of the gate at Syracuse with just 4 hits in his first 32 at-bats. Alvarez torched AA Binghamton early this season before his promotion, slashing .277, .368, .553 with 18 homers and 16 doubles in 67 games. But wow, the Mets have a need for a catcher at the big league level with James McCann out, and having struggled before his injury and Thomas Nito and Patrick Mazika not providing much offensively, it's highly unlikely the Mets will call Alvarez up to catch this season. It's extremely rare for catchers as young as Alvarez to reach the majors, and doing so in a pennant race would mean putting quite a lot on his shoulders. Alvarez could be a DH option later in the season if he catches fire in Syracuse, but a call-up right now doesn't seem like it's even close. Mets at present, Sandy Alderson said shortly after Alvarez's promotion to Syracuse, that the Mets would have to see sustained success from Alvarez in AAA before considering a promotion. But folks, he is on the radar, and pretty soon we will be seeing Francisco Alvarez in a Met uniform. Just not maybe this year. But let's talk a little bit about the Subway Series that is really amped up and reminds me of the old days. Remember back when it all started back in the old Bronx Boulevard Yankee Stadium? The Mets and Yankees played in the regular season for the first time during a 3-game series that featured some of the most raucous and frenzied crowds in the history of baseball in this city. And over the last 25 years, there has been something special about the Subway Series. But while these games have been circled on the calendar every year since the first ones back in 97, there have only been a handful of times when the Mets and Yankees met during the regular season during what was a potential preview of something much grander down the line. That included 1999, 2000, 2006. But it hasn't happened much with the Mets-Yankee tilts most often being juicy matchups between two teams who had very little chance to meet in October. Simply put, there has not been a Met-Yankee series in the last 2 decades where both teams were this good. There hasn't been a Met-Yankee series in the last 15 years where both teams were potentially special enough to not only reach October, but make it to the World Series. Until now. Now, in the hours before Tuesday's series opening, Citi Field was buzzing, and it was packed. Like I said, it was playoffs atmosphere, and it was standing room only. And the players and coaches had to be taking it all in. And there were some Met alumni there, too, to take it all in. Turk Wendell, Todd Frazier. So even the alumni were coming out for this one. And that's good because the Mets are on a pace to win more games than any team in their history except the 86 squad that reached 108 victories before winning the World Series. The Yankees are on pace to win more games than they have since 1998 when they captured the first of 3 consecutive World Series titles with their 1 in 2000 coming at the expense of the Mets and celebrated at Shea Stadium. And the only Subway World Series New York has seen since 1956. Now we can go over the history of each fan base, how those fans view their allegiances, and how many of those fandoms are passed from generation to generation. We can trace it all the way back to the battles the Yankees had with the Brooklyn Dodgers and Giants before both teams fled for California. But you know that story. Instead, let's talk about how this 2-game set between the Mets and the Yankees at Citi Field and the one that will happen later in the season at Yankee Stadium maybe a preview for what's going to happen in the fall. Their fans of both teams would be beside themselves with ecstasy if the Mets and Yanks met in the World Series, and those who were dreading the possibility. When these teams met in the Fall Classic in 2000, the city was transformed and transfixed for a few weeks. It almost didn't feel real. If it happens again in October and the Mets chase their first championship since 1986 and the Yankees look to win just their second one since 2000 and first since 2009, the city again will be at rapt attention. Think about Jacob deGrom going against Gerrit Cole in Game 1. How about Edwin Diaz in the mound attempting to lock down a one-run game against, say, Aaron Judge? Imagine Max Scherzer going right after Giancarlo Stanton and Quay Holmes battling Pete Alonso, all with the added pressure of a series that, at least in a baseball sense, means everything. It's fair to believe that a Mets-Yankee World Series in 2022 would be even better than the one in 2000 when the Mets lost in five games in a fair that was marred by Roger Clemens' action in Game 2, throwing a jagged piece of bat at Mike Piazza and somehow not getting ejected for it. While you're watching the Mets and Yankees play one another in this summer heat wave, picture them doing it again in a few months in the autumn chill with every pitch under the lights long after the sun sets. That would be beautiful, wouldn't it? Now take the sound those first Met Yankee crowds made in 1977, the frenzy of it all, and multiply it. For Tuesday series opener, there was a buzz in the ballpark that has been absent during the most recent Met Yankee tilts. Fans from both sides were rowdy, preparing to let their emotions spill over. How about when Darryl Strawberry, another legend who has been on both sides of this rivalry, threw out the first pitch? As the suspense built on Tuesday and the fans went nuts. The real possibility is two teams meeting in October for just the second time ever became even more tantalizing. For the first time in a long time, the dream of a Met-Yankee Subway World Series might become a reality. And wouldn't we go crazy if that were the case? And what I love about the Mets is the demeanor of Buck Showalter, how calm and cool he's been. And he admits this Yankee game is big, and he realizes the Braves are right behind us. But he is honest, and he says what he has to say. And let's admit, the Braves reeled off a 14-game winning streak and are playing around a 750 clip over the last 6 weeks. It's not anything the Mets have really done wrong. And Buck's even not surprised that the race is tightened. It's a given that Atlanta was going to be competitive, and they're going to be tough to get through. Philly's the same way, but with Harper being out, the Phillies are experiencing a little pain, and they're not that good defensively, and their pitching isn't as good as the Braves. But everything is a week or two away. The pitching the Marlins have, they can run together 10 or 12 games, so they could be a force in the playoff picture for the NL East. So you just don't dwell on whatever teams are doing. You just look at it as a given when the season starts, regardless of what may appear in April or May. You know what the Mets can do, and that's what you have to try and do. Look at the big picture. It seems like everybody wants to know what's going to happen before it happens. Well, we're going to find out. We know the Mets have the ability to do it. It's a given. Look at the team, the things that they've accomplished and the pedigree this team has. Same with the Yankees when you think about it. They're living up to their potential. Can they do it in October? Well, they have the potential. That's all you can base it on right now. They still have to play the games. Now, from May 27th through the end of the first half, the Braves play 28 games against teams whose season is all but over, including 10 against the Nationals and series against the Diamondbacks, Rockies, Reds, Pirates, A's, and Cubs. Now, that doesn't mean the Braves should be expected to start losing in bunches anytime soon, but their season and their schedule gets noticeably tougher the rest of the way. As far as the Mets, the schedule will soften up a bit soon. And on paper, their September and early October slate looks like it could be a chance for them to fatten up. That schedule will include 24 games against the Nationals, Pirates, Marlins, Cubs, and A's. Regardless of whether the Mets win the NL East, they're in a very strong position to reach the postseason with a wide gap between them and the teams out of the playoff picture, which means any team behind the third wild card spot. The Mets should also be looking to finish with one of the top two records of the three division winners, since those two teams will receive a bye past the new wild card round and into the NLDS. Now, like I said, you never want to go too far into it. Still a long way to go. But you look at the standings and you have to feel good right now. And that's what you want to do. You want to get a good feeling out of what you accomplished so far. and just keep playing the same ball you keep playing. Now, the good thing is there were some updates on Brian McCann and Trevor May. McCann is tentatively scheduled for a rehab assignment Thursday. The veteran catcher suffered an oblique injury early this month and looks to be close to return. As for May, the reliever would join Jacob DeGrom in his own rehab assignment Wednesday for Triple-A Syracuse. According to Buck, the plan is for May to pitch Wednesday and then Saturday and Sunday to give him back-to-back days of work. If all goes well, May could join the team early next week, and that would be another right arm possibly that really could help down the stretch. And let's not forget, the DeGrominator makes his rehab start this afternoon for Triple-A Syracuse. Now, he threw 60 pitches during a similar game Thursday, and he came out feeling good. So hopefully he'll be feeling good after today's performance, too. Now, the madness, or should I say Game 2 of the series, continues tonight, 7:10 p.m. And yes, we have Mad Max going on the mound, 6-2, 2.28 ERA, going against Domingo Germán, 0-1 with a 15.00 ERA. You have to like our chances in this one, but let's remember, anything can happen in baseball. Now, this is one of those games that ESPN has exclusive rights to broadcasting, so don't be looking at Ron Keith and Gary to call the game. I won't be on SNY or WPIX. It will be exclusively on ESPN, but it will still be on radio coverage on the Mets Radio Network on with Howie on 66. I keep saying 6, that's the Yankees network now, CBS 880. So check it out. Or if you want to listen to John Sterling and Susan Waldman, it's on 660. But what Met fan would want to do that, right? Now, as always, let's talk about this podcast. If you're not subscribed to the podcast, by all means, please do subscribe. You'll be alerted every time one is updated on a daily basis. And if you're not a member of the group New York Mets Baseball Way of Life on Facebook, the sister companion to this podcast, please do check us out. A lot of great content, a lot of great participation by everybody in the group every day. And it's your one-stop shopping for New York Mets information. And on that site every day, we even have New York Mets baseball and Jeopardy and trivia. And today is no different. And we're going to go ahead and zip forward and give you the trivia questions and the Jeopardy questions of the day. That's what we do. And it's your lucky day, as we do every day on this podcast. It's not your lucky day. Every day is your lucky day when you listen to this podcast. But we do give a trivia question and Jeopardy question every day on the podcast. And here's today's trivia question. What is the total amount of players, coaches, or managers who are in the Hall of Fame who have been a member of the Mets? And today's Jeopardy, two clues. First clue, in 1970 and 71, he was used almost entirely as a reliever, posting ERAs at 3.11 and 3.53, respectively. He was traded with Jim Beauchamp, Harry Parker, and Chip Coulter to the Mets for Art Shamsky, Jim Bibby, Rich Folkers, and Charlie Hudson, October 18th, 1971. I'll lock in your answers, and we'll be back at the end of the podcast to tell you how you did. Now, as we always do, we go over Met trivia. Met birthdays and transactions for this date. Two birthdays today. Former Met coach Tom Goodwin is celebrating a birthday. He was our first base coach, I should say, from 2012 to 2017. And happy birthday to Mad Max, who's going to get the ball today and celebrate, hopefully, not only his birthday, but another Met win today. So good luck to Max, and happy birthday. And on this date in 1992, Salty Parker, who managed and coached the Mets in 1967, passed away. Now here are the transactions for this date. On this date in July 27, 1963, the Mets released Jimmy Pearsall. Yeah, that's after he ran around the bases backwards. And Quayon Jones was released on this date in 1975. The Mets accused him of insubordination. And this date in 1990, the Mets traded Mike Marshall to the Red Sox for Greg Hansel, Paul Williams, and Ed Perozzo. And on this date in 2001, the Mets traded Turk Wendell and Dennis Cook, fan favorite Turk Wendell, to the Phillies for Bruce Chen and Adam Walker. And on this date in 2002, the Mets signed free agent Carlos Gomez. On this date in 2015, the Mets traded Cary Meisner to the Oakland A's for Tyler Clipper. Tyler was an integral part of that Met run in 2015. And another fan favorite and member of that 2015, Lucas Duda was traded on this day in 2017 for Drew Smith. And Drew is still hurling with us. How about that? Then on this date in 2018, Mets traded Asdrubal Cabrera for Franklin Colome. Asdrubal had some good years with us. He was part of that 2016 wildcard team and he hit some memorable home runs. And this day in 2018, the Mets signed free agent Austin Jackson. Now, what else is going on in the group? I'm glad you asked. A lot of good stuff, like I said, every day. Dan Wiener came up and asked us, instead of lining up for Soto, who wouldn't want to trade within the division, should the Mets inquire about Ohtani and Trout? There's a food for thought. I don't think it'll happen, but you never know in this game. Juan Manuel Aponte ordered us that again. Like I said, the game tonight is only on ESPN. And Dan Wiener says, Contreras and Roberts to the Mets, that would make sense, and posts a great article from the New York Post explaining why. And we showed pictures of Darryl Strawberry's return from Darryl's own Facebook site. Check him out. Great photos from his return to Citi Field yesterday. And Heather Gross mentioned that Met coach Wayne Gerby underwent prostate surgery for cancer on Tuesday morning, per the New York Post, and the cancer was found by doctors early in the season, but Kirby opted to wait until the All-Star break to have the procedure done. He's doing well and is expected to be back with the team in 10 days, but will be limited dugout work when he recovers. So get well, Coach Kirby. Don Kecko posts a beautiful picture of Roger Craig, and I love the way the uniforms looked back in the day. And on this day in 2011, like I said, the Big Turk Wendell trade happened. Then I asked a question today, would the Mets look better in an orange alternate jersey? Would it work for you? Well, we had mixed feelings on it. The majority said they don't like the orange. Gary Oldenthal even said, too many alternatives, enough is enough. Let's just keep it traditional. And I kind of agree with Gary. I like the traditional white uniform. And I like the gray on the road. And then on this date in 1999, the Pirates defeated the Mets 5-1 and won a Major League Baseball's turn ahead of the clock nights. Each team wears futuristic uniforms with the home team squad becoming the Mercury Mets for the night. The futuristic theme is carried out throughout the evening with the scoreboard flashing computerized photos of the players as each comes to the plate. Ricky Henderson, for example, was given three eyes and pointy ears and plays left quadrant. Al Martin hits the first of his two home runs in the first sector, and rookie Chris Benson goes the distance for the win. It was fun, but it didn't last that long. Then on this day in 2011, one of the bigger trades in Met history occurred when the Giants got one of the top players available at the trading deadline, Mets all-star center fielder Carlos Beltran, who was set to become a free agent at the end of the season. Giants send top pitching prospect Zach Wheeler to New York, but the Mets will be responsible for a significant portion of Beltran's remaining salary. Then on this date in 1985, a rare occurrence indeed, for the second time in a week, the Mets win 16-4, this time pounding the Astros in the opener of a doubleheader sweep. They break a 4-4 tie in the seventh with a fielder's choice by Keith Hernandez, a two-run double by Gary Carter, and a three-run homer by Ray Knight. All 16 runs are unearned as relievers Frank Dipino and Mike Maddon each give up six, and starter Bob Nepper allows four runs. Jesse Orosco is the winner in the first game and earns a save for Bill Latham's first major league win in the second, a 7-3 victory. And then we had pictures from the induction of Gil Hodges in the Hall of Fame. Beautiful picture of Sarah Seaver with Jay Horowitz. You want to check it out on the site. And like I said, every day there's good stuff on there. And we noted that for the first time in MLB history, the Mets and Yankees will match up holding sole possession of first place in their respective divisions. How about that? So, a lot's happening. And we'll have a lot to talk about tomorrow, as usual. So, check us out tomorrow. But before we go, we want to give you the answers to our trivia and Jeopardy questions of the day. So without further ado, let's give them to you. The trivia question was, what is the total amount of players, coaches, and managers who are in the Hall of Fame who have been a member of the Mets? Well, the correct answer is 17. Congrats to John Tierney on being the first to submit the correct answer. today's Jeopardy. Two clues as always. In 70 and 71, he was used almost entirely as a reliever, posting ERAs of 3.11 and 3.53 respectively. He was traded with Jim Beauchamp, Harry Parker, and Chip Coulter to the Mets for Art Shamsky, Jim Bibby, Rich Folkers, and Charlie Howe on October 18, 1971. The correct answer is, who is Chuck Taylor? Or I should say the correct response is, who is Chuck Taylor? Congrats again to John Tierney on being the first to submit the correct response. Well, there you have it. That's going to wrap up another great podcast. I want to thank you all for listening as always. And let's remember the big game tonight. Max Scherzer on the mound. And we got Jacob Grom going this afternoon. Fun day of Met baseball. DeGrom pitching for Syracuse, of course. And we'll be here to talk about it tomorrow. So enjoy your day. Beautiful weather out there. Beautiful time. They'll be watching Met baseball. So enjoy your day. Thanks for listening. And let's go, Mets.
Ourselves a ball, but the Mets.